purebred Jersey bulls. And we organized what was called bull circles. There would be one here, this farm, one here, one here, one here. Mm-hmm. All right, this one would stay for a year, move over to here. This one would move down here, and this move here, and this move here. They were called bull circles. It really was a square. And so you see, it wasn't long. In about 3 years, we were able. Of course, I wasn't up there quite 3 years. But in 3 years, these circles had moved on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And just about covered that area. And it wasn't long before milk was producing more income for those farmers.
Yeah.
And their life changed, because it used to be in East Texas that every January you'd see covered wagons, or poor wagons, people with all of their possessions and all of their kids moving from one farm to another. And now, when dairying was brought in, mm-hmm. and they could grow something else, they could grow vegetables and all, they were able to buy this land. They were sharecroppers, most of them. Then when enough money came in to where they could start buying land and building homes. And I guess right after I left the university in 1926, I guess I got interested in what you were talking about, like President Kennedy's philosophy, that if you can do something to help people, help themselves, it's worthwhile. And then when he came along, his philosophy was such, I mean, his whole life, his whole understanding of the human race was such that it just challenged my imagination. Mm-hmm. And then since I'd had some agriculture, and then I had insurance, and then I had housing, and then the Federal Housing Administration, frankly, pretty much geared in those days, under the Republicans, it was pretty much geared to surefire projects. They had let a person, they would insure a loan for a person, in other words, who could obviously afford it mm-hmm. and do it himself. Mm-hmm. But here came President Kennedy, and he said, but we've got another segment here.
Yes.
Who, if given a chance, can prove their worth, their dependability, mm-hmm. and prove that they can own homes. And I made many, many loans, signed many, many loans that a lot of people wouldn't have signed. But I didn't see any reason for not going ahead and building a good home, because if Jones didn't live there, Smith would live there, somebody else would live there. And I've gone around all over this area and been very, very proud to see places that I had a whole lot to do with. Shed a little blood.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, now what do you want me to quote me now? What do you want to tune in on right now?
Okay, well, the next thing is that you were involved.
You were talking about religion.
Yes.
I had a real compliment paid me by Jesse Higgins, who is PR man for Dow Chemical.
Oh.
He was making a speech and had it written up, and he said that Neil Pickett is one of my heroes. Mm-hmm. Jesse's highly educated and a very powerful man down there, been president of that big Rotary Club, 150. And he was quoted in the newspaper saying I was one of his heroes, because when the underworld shook their fist in my face and said, the trouble with you, Mayor Pickett, you're carrying your religion into politics, Neil Pickett answered, well, yes, I take my religion with me wherever I go, between you and me, Macon. When that big burly guy stood there right across the mayor's chair was here and council was here, and he was as close as right here to me and just shook his finger in my face. He didn't shake his fist, but he did shake his finger in my face and said, the trouble with you, Mayor Pickett, you're carrying religion into politics. I didn't know what to say. And frankly, between you and me, the only thing that occurred to me was saying, well, you wear your clothes wherever you go. So I just said, well, I'll take my religion with me wherever I go. And it was a good answer.
It was a good answer.
It was a good answer.
Did it turn away wrath?
Huh?
Did it turn away wrath?
No.
No?
No. Uh-uh.
Still a lot of wrath.
Oh, I was engaged in politics there. That was terrible, Megan.
Oh, I can imagine.
We had a law there, city ordinance, that said a beer joint couldn't be established within 300 yards of a school. And the mayor that preceded me said, all right, let's see. Now, the beer joint is here. The school is here. Not 300 yards, closer than that, just across the street and about 100 yards in, about 150 yards. And he said, the way you figure it, he said, the beer joint is here. You come down to this corner. You go down to this street. You cross over. You come back up to the school building, and then you go in. And I said, no, we're measuring it from here to here. And I put this guy out, Benison. Oh. And he helped put me out, too, because I'm sure he never forgave me for that. But no, let's get your questions that you want and get me on the subject.
Okay, would you tell me which libraries the DET was involved in putting together? Because I understand that some of the projects of the DET were colleges, water and sewage projects, libraries, and so forth.
Megan, my memory is not what it should be.
Well, I'm sure I can look that up someplace.
That ought to be. That might be in here. You don't have a copy of this, and I don't know that I have but one. Do you have a copy of this?
I don't, and maybe I ought to make a copy at the library so I'd have those facts, those figures.
I have an idea. You'll have to read these headings and see if there is a heading in there that would say.
Alrighty.
And that would, I tried to do some review, but when you can't read, you have a dickens of a time. See what those headings are and see if there's one there that fits in with what you want.
Very likely the one on economic development or
What does that say? How does that read?
It just says economic development. It's on page 11. Let's have a look at this. Oh, I see. Here's a listing of all the different committees. And some of them are highways and transportation, educational and vocational, natural resources, industrial development, municipal water and sewer survey subcommittee. Yeah. This would be very good for me to have a copy of, as a matter of fact.
I don't have but that one copy. I'm sorry, but...
Could we copy it at the library?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do that sometime.
I think you'll find some of the answers you're asking me. I think you'll find them in there.
Yes, I see them already.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. There's a bunch of stuff in there. That'll be very good.
So I won't forget it. I'll just put that out there.
Okay. Next, now you tell me? Oh,
go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No.
Would you tell me about the screening process for the FHA loans? How rigorous was this screening process? Was it like getting a bank loan, or was it more thorough than that?
Megan, at one time it was as rigid as a bank loan.
Uh-huh.
Don't think that I'm taking credit for something, but I was trying to express and fulfill the wishes of President Kennedy.
Yes.
And his advisors. And my brother-in-law, Ralph Yarbrough, was one of those that gave me a great deal of help.
Mm-hmm.
And it did occur to me that home ownership, if it were just made available to those who could qualify for good loans, would be inadequate for the general public.
Mm-hmm.
There are those that need some help. And in the same time, Megan, that you were helping these people help themselves, you were adding a $5,000 or $6,000 piece of property in a city, in Diebold, that would be paying taxes to the city government. So it was not a total loss. Mm-hmm. And then interest rates weren't so terribly high in those days, but I know that it was 7%, and FHA raised it 7.5%. I raised cane. I said, that's no reason for it at all. But they did raise it. I guess they had to. But I was always for keeping those interest rates down low, low, low. Mm-hmm. And if you, myself, anybody, wanted to go and get a bank loan to build a house, it was almost impossible mm-hmm. to do that unless you have adequate resources. Mm-hmm. And Megan, we know that when you, a man and his wife and their children are in their own home, there is a different environment. There's a different feeling of familyness, of love, consideration for your neighbor and everybody else. And you have time for church work and all. Mm-hmm. And when you're living in a rent house, not able to see that you're making any progress mm-hmm. at all, you're discouraged. And I've had many, many people come into me almost with tears in their eyes and said, I've been paying rent. And they'd say, Mr. Pickett, look, here are my receipts. And if I had had an opportunity to have a federal loan, I could have owned a home. I paid enough money to buy a home, and I'm still renting. Well, after two or three or half a dozen of those people came in to me, I knew pretty well what President Kennedy was talking about. He'd had more experience than I had, at least at greatest heart. And I knew what he was talking about. And I became a little unpopular with my office in Houston and with Washington until I let Margaret's brother know that Washington was kind of holding me back. Mm-hmm. And then I got some calls. They were coming down to see me, and I was going to get some cooperation. Mm-hmm. And I never did indicate, you know, that they'd been pushed a little. I was just happy. And you'll probably find that our Houston office, now the word liberal nowadays, Reagan has seemed to make it appear something that isn't good. But the loans, the understanding, appreciation of people and all were a little more liberal. And that's just the way I've always lived, I guess, because and the truth of the matter is, FHA is a good paying proposition. I mean, FHA has made money. They've lost a whole lot. But as I said, they've given people homes. Any of these projects had to pay city taxes. All of them have had to pay city taxes. So it hasn't been a loss at all. Okay, where do you want me to start now?
Okay. Next thing is, do you know of any other company towns, timber towns or otherwise, in the United States where workers got the titles to their homes in the way that they did through the connection between Arthur Temple and the FHA?
No, I don't. But I know that the Red Cedar Shingle Bureau paid for my expenses to come out to Washington.
Which bureau?
Red Cedar Shingle Bureau.
Red Cedar Shingle.
Red Cedar Shingle. Mm-hmm. In Washington, paid my expenses mm-hmm. for me to come out there and tell them what we had done here in Diebold and other places. Mm-hmm. See, now that was in the housing days. That was when I was manager of the Lumber Association of Texas.
That was 35 to 40?
That was in the 40s. Mm-hmm. In the late, 38 I guess it was, or 39. Mm-hmm. But I think, I don't know that I've had that philosophy, but maybe I have. And what they wanted me to do was to talk on, we called it low-cost housing. And mm-hmm. really, homes, beautiful homes could be built for $3,000, $3,500, $4,000 in those days. And, of course, they were interested in selling shingles.
Yes.
And they had me to come out to tell them what we were doing here in Texas. I must must have a copy of that speech someplace, but I don't know where it is. But I told him what we were doing in the housing
mm-hmm.
association. But my work has always been, it seems, aimed and directed toward helping people get homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when are you going to start recording?
It's been recording.
Oh. Well, I didn't go enough on religion, did I?
You can tell me more about religion if you'd like. I'd be delighted. Any of these topics for you to just talk on about it. But I've got more questions if you want to hear the more questions.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. Well, would you mind talking about why labor unions made very few inroads in Diboll?
I don't think labor unions were ever welcomed to Diboll.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a prohibition on the organizing of labor unions in Diboll.
What was the prohibition? Who put that down?
Well, it must come from the very top, but I don't think it was a definite no. But I don't know of any encouragement that was ever given to labor organizations.
Yeah.
And I know when they had that strike here, it was a pretty mean affair. You weren't here at that time.
When was that?
I don't know, but they had pickets out here on their entrance. I don't remember the date. I don't remember the date at all. But
do you remember the decade?
Well, Alan Miller was director of publicity for him at that time. Yes, the decade must have been one or two. Well, we were living here then.
Okay.
And we came up here in 67, so it must have been in the 70s.
Okay, I need to learn more about that. I just moved to East Texas in 79 myself.
Well, this was in the 70s, or maybe the early 80s, but it would be early 80s because, well, it's the middle 80s. No, it was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alan Miller could give you some information on that.
Good. I will check with him. What union organization was involved there? Or should I check with Alan?
You'd have to because, I don't know, you see, I went out of the council in 72 or 73,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was after that.
I see.
And I was involved only as a citizen, just being concerned, hoping the thing could be settled. But I think there has been a prohibition against organized labor here, if not announced, certainly pronounced.
Pronounced, yeah. Okay. Well, one of the things that's been said to me about that is that conditions were actually better here for people, and there was the workers themselves did not accept labor unions as readily as they might have other places because they were in a better situation here.
I've never talked to a laborer or, well, artisan about it, but that is what was said. What I heard
mm-hmm.
was that there was no need for labor unions when the people are getting all that they need or all that they desire or all that they could learn or more
mm-hmm.
than they would under a labor union. There's nothing a labor union boss could get from us that we aren't willing to give them anyhow. We've already given it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that vacations, and I understand that pay, and I think they have a fine medical agreement here,
mm-hmm.
and I guess if they added up all of the assets, they probably have a good case.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a desire of most working people to belong to an organization of which they are a member or a part.
Mm-hmm.
But it just wasn't permitted.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people, of course, had the people, workers, artisans, everybody rebelled, they could have had a labor union. Yeah. But apparently they didn't think the price that they'd have to pay would be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have lived in Dybal for nearly 20 years now.
Yes.
What was it that made you decide to make Dybal your home?
Megan, it was when I came up here as director of the Federal Housing Administration. And as I went throughout this district, Margaret was born over here in Chandler, Texas, and she loved East Texas. And she used to come up here with me, and we were so well received, and we got such wonderful cooperation that when they organized the Deep East Texas Development Council and got in touch with me and asked me if I would like to take the job, Margaret and I gave it very serious consideration. We had a home in Houston, and we were fortunate in that our children had been educated and were out on their own. Our three children, two daughters and son, had received their education. The two girls were married. Neil was a Green Beret in Vietnam. In fact, he came on his way back to Houston. He came through Dybal and visited with us for a few days. And we just found the people here and found this spirit of cooperation that I received as director of the Federal Housing Administration. I thought that if that could be expanded into the cooperation of these 13 counties, that we could accomplish many things worthwhile. And then I, as director of the FHA, I traveled over all these counties, Shelby County, all of these poor counties in this 13 area. Of course, Angelina wasn't too bad off, neither was Nacogdoches, but the other 11 were. And I just thought that this cooperation of Arthur Temple and his people here would be such that something worthwhile could be accomplished. And I guess it was just a challenge to do something for a lot of people. And I'd always been interested in water, sanitary sewers, parks and playgrounds, homes, because that all went along with the Housing Authority and as manager of Lum Association of Texas. We knew you were not going to have a good market for the sale of homes or lumber if you didn't have a good community. And it just occurred to me, it did again, Margaret and I talked about it. We took a reduction in salary, had to come up here and take the job. And we just decided that we'd make this our home for a while. Because when I came up here in 1967, I was 65. I was born in 1902. And I figured that that would probably be just about my last job. And it was. Of course, I was very active, governor, district, rotary, and those things. But it was just a challenge to do something for a whole lot of people. And it gave me a great deal of satisfaction to go to these little communities, as I've mentioned, many of them there, and see these housing projects, individual homes. I was just as much interested in individual homes. But I'd always had an interest in water and sewer and utilities, because you can't have a good home without those. And that's where I spent a whole lot of my time and effort and energy in getting loans for those people. And nothing gave me any more pleasure than to go into one of these towns when they're working. I went, I'm trying to think of the name of the little town. I thought of it the other day. We got them a loan. I think it was $45,000 for gas. And I went up to that town one day. It was raining. The mayor and nearly everybody in town was out with shovels and spades. They didn't have enough money for the big contract, but they were digging the ditches themselves for the laying of these gas pipelines. and make it that kind of community cooperation just appealed to me.
Brings tears to your eyes.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
And you wanted to do things. You wanted to do things.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I've just had people say, oh, the tears in their eye. Oh, I've got electricity now, and I've got a sewer, and I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
But it all fitted in, I guess, with the years I spent with the Lumbermen's Association going around in this area, the whole state of Texas, and finding what it meant to individuals to own their own home.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk a little bit more about the Lumbermen's Association and the work you did there?
I think I've got the file on LAT.
Want me to look in there?
This is FHA.
Mm-hmm.
And what is this?
DET.
DET.
The one on top there is DET. There might be one below there.
No, I think I have a file in yonder on FHA. Can you disconnect me for a second?
I'll disconnect you.
I'll show you what my file.
A little more tape. I'd just like to ask you your personal views on Diboll as a town and on what you think would be the very most important things for me to include in this book about the quality of life here, the community, how people cooperate, all that sort of thing.
Just trying to think where to begin, Megan.
Well, you came in 67. What,
yes.
What made you decide to stay? What was it about life here that you liked besides the job you were involved in?
Okay. I'll tell you. I made several visits to Diboll and was very much impressed with the energy, dynamics, and the character of the people of Diboll, and discussed it with Margaret, and we decided that, if they'd make us a pretty fair offer, we'd be glad to move to Diboll.
Mm-hmm.
And we always found that the spirit of Diboll, and I do not know how to describe it, but I think it's best shown when we have our annual Diboll Day.
Yes.
Everybody in Diboll, from the youngest citizen to the oldest, come out on Diboll Day to express appreciation for the privilege of living in Diboll.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that this spirit emanates from any body high up in the community. I think it is the part and parcel and soul of the citizens of Diboll.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't attribute to any man the ability to infuse a whole city with a spirit of ambition and energy and dedication. It must come from within.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in Arthur Temple, we've had a man who can stir imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But the imagination has to come from the littlest citizen as well as from the greatest citizen. And we on South Meadows here call each other neighbors. And the word neighbor is used a great deal in Diboll. And I think it makes you feel good to be called neighbor by your neighbor. And we have a feeling of neighborliness in Diboll that I doubt is excelled in but very, very few other cities.
Well,
regardless of size, cities are getting so big now.
Mm-hmm.
that there is no longer any feeling of being good neighbors.
Yep.
And here in Dybal, everyone seems to be obsessed with the idea that I should be a good neighbor. People have been so kind to me. I'm living in a good atmosphere. And I want to make a contribution. I think feeling here is that I've received a lot from Dybal. I want to give something to Dybal. You want to stop a minute? Can you cut it off for a second?
Yes. Religion and the spirit of enterprise. That's the topic.
Wow.
That's a tall order, but you know, I got started on this. I know, a whole book ought to be written on that, but I got started on this when I was interviewing Latine Temple. And, well, as a matter of fact, I first thought about it when I was interviewing Arthur Temple, because he told me that his grandfathers